Breaker 19, this here's a rubber duck. You got a copy on me, Big Ben? Come on. Yeah, 10-4, Big Ben, for sure, for sure. By golly, it's clean clear to Flagtown. Come on. Yeah, it's a big 10-4 there, Big Ben. Yeah, we definitely got the front door, good buddy. Mercy sakes alive, looks like we got us a convoy.
And he's there, folks. He's a Mungandai, I think. Rod Hanafy, president of the Road Freighters Association, the National Road Freighters Association. Good morning to you, good buddy.
Good morning, Luke. How are you, mate?
I'm very, very well. Where are you?
Yes, Mungandai.
For our listeners around Australia, tell them exactly where you are.
I'm at a cotton gin on the Queensland-New South Wales border west of Gundawindi.
Okay. Do you get through there often? Is that part of your...
Do a bit, yes, yes. There is a little crossing here over the river, and the police have been very lonely out here doing their border patrols. But I've been here a few times. They wouldn't let me through last week because I hadn't got my result, and I had to sit at Bogabilla the other night and wait for it to come through. Seems there's a lot of people worried about that new strain, and they blame that and the floods on the delays in getting our results through, which was a bit of a bugger.
That's strange. There are five people in Australia with this new strain. I think it's something we're going to have to get used to. I honestly, look, I'm not a doctor. I'm not an epidemiologist or an immunologist, but are we going to shut down the whole country, our state borders and our international borders every time this happens? Because we'll never open. Because I think there's going to be a new strain fairly regularly.
Well, the flu certainly went through those changes each time, and they're saying that the vaccines can be modified to suit. And look, we've got through this far, and they're saying that hopefully we're over the worst of it. There is going to be people get it no matter what, and it's something that we've got to deal with. And, of course, you know, we've discussed with us we're generally away from everybody else, and we're not quite sort of prone to it in that way. So I think our truckies have done a marvellous job so far. But, geez, we've paid an inordinate price for, you know, not being involved and being treated badly, I suppose, in some ways with what happened with just the rule changes and the penalties and still now still having to be tested every 7 days to cross into Queensland.
133353 is the number. If you've got a question for Rod Hanafy, or if you want to ask Rod a question about road safety, about trucking, he's here for you every Tuesday. He's here right now. You can phone through. Jess has just cleared some lines. 133353. Phone through right now to talk to Rod Hanafy. Now, what's the bee under your bonnet this morning?
Well, mate, it's funny. I was at a truck stop the other day, and a bloke said to me, "Have you ever seen $1 million load?" And I said, "Oh, well, I probably have. You look at some of the big machinery, there was an 8.5-metre load, which is, of course, a dump truck, mining dump truck, with all the wheels off it, travelling from Queensland to Mount Thorley. They had the big signs up and actually passed it, so it's a fairly big sort of a load. And you can imagine buying a dump truck, they're worth quite a lot of money. So they're well over $1 million, and I'm pretty sure at one stage I recall carting a load of synthetic engine oil. And in those days, that was as dear as poison. And gee, some of the chemical we cart, I think, is probably way up there. But yeah, this bloke said, "Oh, have you ever seen $1 million load?" And I sort of looked at his trailer and I said, "Oh, no, why?" And he had these supposed composite railway sleepers on that didn't look to be a great deal, but he said it was worth $1 million. And
wow.
So I'm wondering, you know, what's the most expensive load people have ever carted? I'm sure there's some people out there with some big stories.
What's the most expensive load you have ever carted? Give us a call, 133353, just a bit of trivia for you this morning. And then when you double that with the price of a new Kenworth.
Yes. Yes, well, that's right. The rig can be worth $750,000 or more, let alone that load that you're putting on its back.
Yeah. 133353 is the number. Rod Hanafy is here if you've got a trucking story. Now, Rod, just before we take a call, last week I told you about a truck that the Minister for War and Finance saw on the M1 between Newcastle and Sydney. It was a truck with a big screen on the back, TV screen.
Yep.
And it was projecting the view from the driver's cabin that was pointing forward.
The windscreen, yeah. Out front, yep.
Yeah. And she said it was a brilliant idea. She said everyone in the queue behind the truck could see what was ahead. You could see if it was okay to overtake. And she just thought it was a great idea and wondered if it was going to catch on. Do you have any news about this?
No, mate, haven't seen or heard any more since then. I certainly haven't seen any media on it. It hasn't been in the industry media that I've picked up. So it must be something as a single truck, depending on where it goes and what it does, is not going to be seen by as many people. But an expensive thing to imagine, mate. And look, I've been on some roads, and I'm sure you're aware that with all this rain that's been about lately, geez, there's some potholes about, mate, and we really wonder about the value of some of the repairs, and there's going to be an enormous amount of money spent fixing roads following all this rain. I drove in and out of Dolby today, and there was about 8 lots of water over the road there. But there's so many sections of the roads that we travel on have been affected by floods, and they're going to have to go out and fix all of that first before we get into the defects in the roads and the failures and those culverts and bumps that is as you drive along. It's like you have a 4 to 6 inch drop, or we've got the air suspended seats in the truck, mate. I had a couple today that actually bottomed out the seat, and I'm not a big bloke. I only weigh 80 kilos at the moment, but you can imagine there's some bigger blokes than me, and if you're bottoming out an air-suspended seat, well, you can imagine the impact that has right through the truck, right through the suspension and into the load. And it's one of the things that we've asked before is, why do our trucks have to be roadworthy when many of our roads aren't truckworthy?
Very good question. And if a car or a truck, any vehicle at all, comes to grief because of a pothole, is there legal, some sort of a legal recourse that's available to the owner or the driver? If a car goes over a pothole that has been in existence for, I don't know, what's too long, a week, and completely ruins the front suspension and possibly worse, causes an accident, can you sue whoever provides that road? If it's a local government, you could soon be sending local governments broke. And the only way to combat that sort of litigious behaviour is to put rates up. So what do you do? What do you make of it, Rod?
Well, mate, there is, and I live in Dubbo, so that roads in New South Wales are controlled by what used to be RMS, Roads and Maritime Services, and I think now they're Transport for New South Wales. And I am aware of people who have in the past, a couple of examples, if you hit a pothole, I know people damaged a rim, and rang up and asked, and it had to be a minimum value for the repair of I think it was $1,200 at the time. You had to have photographic proof. You had to know exactly where the hole was that caused it. And of course, you had to be able to prove that pothole had done that damage. So whilst you can say, yes, I hit this pothole and it was, 2.7 kilometers west of Whoop Whoop, and here's the photo of it. Oh, but what? Are you sure that that's what did it? So, yes, there is an avenue, and I know blokes that have put in bills where roads have been resurfaced, and I'm sure you've seen them doing it, Luke. They run along with the tar, spray all the tar, and then put the stone on top. And at times, some of that peels off if they do it at the wrong time of year because it's either too cold or it's too hot. And I know people that have had trucks with real nice shiny rims. They've spent a lot of time and money buying rims and had them all polished and then driven over new roadworks to only have all those rims covered in tar. And I know blokes that have sent in a bill.
Oh, really?
Your road, yes. Well, you can imagine there's 32. Would you like to sit there and go and polish them all again with them?
No, but there's reasonable wear and tear. And if you've got shiny rims, I totally appreciate that. If a tar road dirties your rims, are you really going to send a bill?
Well, some have done it, mate. You can imagine trying to sit there and clean 32 of them. And it's not just you know, wiping a dot off, this has covered the whole rim in tar, and it's because of the way the repair was done. Or, and
well, you've got to repair a road. And, I mean, if you're going to make an egg, if you're going to make an omelet, you've got to crack an egg.
Yes, and there is a difference between normal and standard repair or a repair that fails. So if they've done the repair and they've done it at the wrong time, and, mate, there was a section of road done between Dubbo and Gilgandra at one stage. They laid it at one day, and within 2 days, all the stone had gone and it was back to bitumen and they had to do it again. And, look, you know, we get charged as the road transport industry with damaging the roads. Now, we're not the only people that use them. It's not like the rail. The rail has the rail line. They're the only people that use the rail line. No one else can get on there with their train and run up and down the railway line. We share it with every motorist, and the motorist uses it to go and visit grandma or to visit the family, whatever it might be. But we have to share that road. And, yes, we carry loads on it. But the loads are to the communities. We don't drive up and down with a load of, you know, bread just for fun. It's going to people to eat, and that's what we do. We supply everything to everyone in Australia. And yet, we are the only ones, really, that pay for the contribution to those repairs. We are charged with it seriously. And then, of course, we're blamed for it.
Who's charged? And yet, how much?
Well, the transport industry is.
The transport industry is charged, and who pays that?
Well, then the customer pays. Obviously, the cost of running a truck increases as the wear and tear on the truck increases, and the road damage causes that. So then it costs you more to cart freight on a truck because of that road damage.
So then if it costs more to cart freight, those prices are then passed on. So it's more expensive to deliver your bread. So is it ultimately the customers that buy the bread that are paying for it?
It is, and that's where in our society it is harder for those who live outside of the major capital cities because of that cost. And if that cost is reduced because the roads are built up to a standard instead of down to a cost, then they get better service. They don't have to pay so much for that loaf of bread. And, of course, then the road is safer. So there's two things. There is the damage. But as you suggested, mate, what happened when there's a pothole? Now, if you hit a pothole in a truck, that's a bugger. You might blow a steer tyre, and that's a terrible thing. It might put you off the road. It might cause an accident. But what if someone in a car hits that pothole and because of that swerves across into the path of a truck and dies?
How do you measure that? Listen, you've got a few people there wanting to talk to you. We're going to play some music and we'll come back and we'll talk, okay? You ready? You up for it, Rod? He's up for it. The Night Shift and Triple M, 133353. It's Tuesday morning, which means Rod Hanafy from the National Road Freighters Association joins us for a chat. We talk about road safety. His question this morning is, what's the most expensive load you've ever carted? I mean, do people know how much their load's worth, Rod?
Look, it depends. For example, you might be a livestock carrier. You might go and pick up a bull, like some of those bulls that they're semen, and that is worth an absolute fortune, let alone the bull itself. So you could have one on worth a phenomenal amount of money, let alone a full trailer load.
That's what I would call a very expensive load. 133. Hey, by the way, have you been using your Swift Grow?
I did get home last weekend, and I went and did all the fruit trees, mate. Yeah,
so all right, I'll hear about it later. But you've got your Swift Grow.
I have, thank you, sir.
You've got your Swift Grow. That's good, because there is a deal on. There is a deal on. If you buy one Swift Grow and one Swift Fort, my good buddy Joe, the microbiologist who invented Swift Grow, he is going to give you a second batch of each for free. So it's two for the price of one, or it's half price. SwiftGrow.com.au, free delivery anywhere in Australia, and the offer ends today. It's Tuesday. It was a Black Friday deal. I just looked at the calendar. That deal is over today. So this is your last chance to get the two-for-one deal. contact swiftgrow.com.au. There is a phone number there. You can ring it, leave a message, or write it down. Montana will probably take your order, and Joe might answer. Swiftgrow.com.au, the odourless fish manure. It won the 2020 Parramatta City Council Excellence in Technology Award. But after just 3 days, your garden goes berserk. Your plants love it, your lawn. And it's this deal is over today. Swiftgrow.com.au. Bruce, good morning.
How are you, mate? Sounding well?
Thank you.
I hope you're well too, Rod.
Thank you, mate.
Mate, a couple of quick ones. Most expensive load, don't know, it'd be a toss-up between a full load of bonded scotch back in the 80s or maybe a load of scratchies. You can take your choice on that one as to which would be worth the most.
Depends.
I've got no idea. It does, doesn't it? Because there was a lot of tickets in the back of it, I can tell you, but they told me there was only ever one big winner in it all. How's that?
I guess what? Brucey boy?
What's that, mate? Yeah, mate.
This week, Powerball, 80 million. It was 60 last week. Didn't go off.
It's a bit sad, isn't it?
80 million this week. Sorry, I digress. Keep going.
No, that's fine. You just reminded me I've got to get a ticket. Yeah. Thanks, mate. Rod, just a quick one. We watch what's been going on over the years. We used to have decent sleepers and bunks and things to sleep in, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. Then they said you can have a bit more length or a bit more this and all the... company said, well, okay, we'll just turn that into freight.
Yes.
It's now at the point that when are we going to get some sort of form of regulation that says if this is registered as a sleeper cab, it has a minimum of?
Well, there is a minimum standard to register a sleeper cab. But as you say, where we asked for more, particularly those blokes that run long distance, so you can be comfortable and you can get good quality sleep in it and you can have it all set up to live in as we do for 6 days or three That's weeks, it. Whatever it might be. And unfortunately, every time we've sought that increase specifically towards giving drivers better comfort, the companies have come along and come up with a better idea to, make more money out of it. So there is still talk of a change to the rules in the future. And it's a little bit like the logbook laws in a way, mate. We've asked for some changes to that, and that those laws should only be available to the driver, should not be mandated by the boss to be used. So
we are
talking with the NTC at the moment. They are doing the heavy vehicle national law review. And look, we're going to, we're setting up our AGM for the National Road Freighters at Toowoomba on the 19th of February. And I'm hoping to talk to the NTC tomorrow to see if they might come along and answer some questions. And perhaps even we're looking at setting up a bit of a truckies breakfast on the Sunday at the BP at Charlton. Nice. We've invited the NHVR. They're going to have a truckie toolbox thing set up there. We're hoping to have one of the health in gear things there for driver health checks. And one of the criticisms of the NTC has been that they don't talk to enough drivers, and we're hoping that maybe they'll come along and listen to some drivers and show them how serious we are about some of these things, and it is our lives. It's not only our livelihood, but it's our lives on the road.
That's right. It's our comfort and everything that goes with it. And I mean, I'm only casual at the moment. I've had a few big changes in the last 12 months, but I'll ring Luke back later and talk to him about different things on that one. But, yeah, well, it's like when the 14 hours came in. I've said to everybody I work for, that's for me to use, not you.
Yes.
That's my call if I want to use it or if I feel up to using it. If I don't, I'm sorry. My minimum requirement, I'm sorry, is 12 hours.
Yeah, and look, the other thing is... And
some of them get a bit shirty about it.
Oh, they do. Yeah, they think it's there for them, mate.
But it's not.
But we keep trying to get things that help drivers, mate. And look, it's really hard. Most of the trucking associations have very big members. There are very few that represent drivers.
That's right.
That's one of the reasons that we keep badgering these groups to say, we want you to listen to those people that are involved, taking part meeting with RMS on Wednesday about rest areas. Now, New South Wales has been a little bit behind in rest areas, many would agree. One of the critical factors is that this is no change oversight on the Pacific Highway. Now, we only waited, 30 years to get one on the Hume, Absolute squillions of dollars on the Pacific Highway.
That's right.
Nothing was done to provide a changeover facility. And I've said that that's the first place something's got to be done very quickly.
Good on
you,
Bruce.
The other thing that goes with that one, Rod, is that, yeah, they're putting up, well, it's always BP or it's Shell, it's whoever you like along the highway. It's one of the big mobs. But where do you get decent food these days? It's bloody far and few between.
And you mentioned there those sites. Now, I was in Mackay a few weeks ago. Now, they build a big BP site there, and there's only five bays. Now, if you, as the council, you have to build under council requirements, and they've got to build so many car parks and so many toilets and so many things. Why can they build a truck stop on a major highway and the council not require a certain number of parking spaces? And I have spoken to BP since then. They're aware of the complaints. But, of course, the answer is, well, why should we supply parking? And that's where I've said, well, you go to the road authority. Instead of building a parking bay somewhere else, get them to contribute and build something on there and do it as a joint venture.
That's it. Exactly. And then you've got amenities and you've got everything you need that the blokes and all women will use.
Yep.
And it's got to be a win-win for everyone. But thanks for your time. Have a top night and I'll keep listening. And if I get lucky, I'll talk to you later on, Luke.
Call me back, Bruce, because I want to hear the other stuff you want to talk about. Okay, buddy?
Yeah, mate. I'll ring you back later in the night.
Promise me you will. Good on you, Bruce.
Thanks, Rod. Thanks for all your work, mate.
Bye-bye. 133353 is the telephone number. So you put the Swift Grow on your fruit trees. Tell me about it.
Well, mate, I'm waiting to see. I see that that they had shot all up everywhere, and then because I was away, I hadn't got home. I see there was some of the buds had dropped, but I'm hoping I'm sort of back in time to catch them all and get them all to fruit. But they've certainly shot out a hell of a lot more than they had before, so I'm looking forward to a good crop.
You're going to have a great crop, and you've got that harsh red soil in Dubbo. You're going to love it. Swift Grow. .com.au, two for the price of one. Offer ends today. We'll take a break. We'll come back. A lot of people wanting to talk to you, Rod. Rod Hanafy, President of the National Road Freighters Association. Back in a sec. Triple M, the night shift. Rod, Daniel's online for you. Daniel, good day.
How you going, mate? Good. How you going, Rod?
Good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Thanks.
Good. Where are you, Daniel?
Oh, just going through Lithgow.
Going through Lithgow. Okay. What's your question for Rod Hanafy?
Just about cab safety, and I spoke about the, you know, day cabs and that with you guys before, but on another subject, the strength of the cabs. So
yes,
in the ag industry, which Rod would probably know, any tractor has to have a ROPS, which is a rollover protective system.
Yes.
And they're a pretty, you know, especially in a big tractor, they're a pretty sturdy bit of gear.
Yep.
But we don't have that. They do 40 kilometres an hour tops, and that could be a header or anything, and weigh, 12 to 20 ton?
Yep.
But you're driving a truck that weighs 90 ton or close to it or whatever it is, and you don't have that. You have fiberglass and board. In mine, I've only just got a small tin roof. So, yeah. I don't know. You know, what do? That's the question.
Well, I was involved in a meeting, geez, probably 15 years ago now with RMS, and they were releasing their new road safety strategy. And I managed to get an invite to that through annoying the hell out of somebody else. And they had all these little groups where you went into your discussion groups. And I think I was one of only two truck drivers in a room of 50 odd people. And they were talking at the time of rollover standards for four-wheel drives. And I raised exactly the question that you just did. I said, well, you know, geez, I understand that you want four-wheel drives to be safe and they're inherently a little bit unstable because they're taller and that sort of thing. What about trucks? And, of course, there was dead silence around the table and everyone looked at me as if I was stupid. And I said exactly the same thing, mate. We are in a vehicle that is a lot larger. And where is our safety? If you are going to seek design improvements to those vehicles, then why aren't trucks required to meet a similar standard? Now, anybody knows that the European trucks, the Volvos and the Scanias, and Luke, if you ever get a chance, of course, you know the crash test dummy, Luke, that you see in all the videos?
Yeah, yeah.
So Volvo have this excellent video that has a truck sitting up actually on these concrete blocks, and they tip it over and roll it down the hill. And, of course, there's two crash test dummies in there. One has the seatbelt on and one does not. And it shows you the difference if you roll the truck over, and it goes over about two or three times down this hill. And, of course, the bloke that's got the seatbelt on, he stays in the seat and he's reasonably well protected. Whereas, of course, Bjorn, without his seatbelt, he gets thrown around and eventually comes out the windscreen and rolled on by the truck. So the Swedish trucks have a very high cab standard. And Kenworth, when they released the K200, they brought a special jig out from America to prove that their trucks met the standard as well. But nothing had been done about that until I raised it in that standard. But even then, that was only a New South Wales meeting. And we want national standards. And I guess, you know, we know that we don't have that yet. It's something that we're still aiming for, so that we have one set of rules and one set of standards. And even then, with driver licensing, that's another thing. We want one national set of rules for that. And, geez, it's been a fight we've been having for the last 30 years, isn't it?
Like, what do? You retrofit some, like a cage or?
Like, well, at the end of the day, I'm sure you've seen the trucks that operate on the mine sites.
Yeah,
and some of those are required. They have a big frame up the back of the cab, and they have like a 45-degree big steel frame out the top, and that's virtually got to be engineered and meet an engineering standard that if you roll that truck over, that cage will protect the roof of the truck and not squash it down. But that only applies to some mines, and they're not a cheap thing. I think they're worth between $5,000 and $10,000, mate.
Yeah, it would be. So, but, you know, like, people say, oh, how much does that cost? But then you talk to the family that lost someone that could have been saved by that implement, and then you get that off that family what it's worth, you know.
You can't put a price on that, can you?
That's exactly right. So, you know, end of the day, if we do something to our trucks in Australia that make them stronger, well, we just create an industry, not an industry, but more more work for our workers, welders and...
Yeah, I'm with you. Listen, Daniel, I've got to go. There's a lot of people waiting on, but you've raised a very good point, I think, right?
Certainly has, mate. Thank you.
Well done, Daniel.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to get callers that make us think. Tractors have more protection for the driver than the trucks do, right?
Well, of course, I'm sure you're aware, Luke, that the little, you know, the four-wheel drives, the buggies in that, so many people were dying on those, and they now are required by law to have a cab rollover standard so that farmers don't get killed when they're out on their little forbies.
Yeah. Where am I going? Mick. Mick, where are you?
Yeah, g'day, mate. I'm heading out of Melbourne, heading home to Gippsland.
It's a very, very noisy phone, Mick.
How's that?
It's a little bit better. What's your question for Rod?
I rang last week, Luke, and you asked me about the transport industry, and I said, you know, buddy, put it all on the train. I wanted to talk to Rod about trip money, which back in the late 90s when I started, it was called trip money, how you got paid. And, you know, they've just reworded everything, and now it's kilometre rate, you know. So all this whole argument's been the same for the last 25 years, you know. I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel, you know.
Rod, can you answer that?
So what he's talking about years ago, and look, we know there's rogues in every industry, and we've had some in the transport industry, and some of them have used and abused drivers. And back in those days, you were virtually told, get in the truck and get out and make me money. And if you said you were tired, they said, well, too bad, I'll get someone else and put them in your truck. And look, those days have changed. We now have so many laws and so many requirements and GPS tracking and all of those things. But one of the things that hasn't really changed is the way that some drivers are paid. Now, if you work round town, some drivers get paid hourly rate. They start at 8 o'clock, they finish at 5, they get paid. They get paid overtime if they work longer hours than that. They work under an award, and that award means that they must be paid that rate. Otherwise, they can be challenged and taken to court. But what happened, particularly on interstate, was blokes got paid, as he said, then trip money. So you might have got paid $200 to go from Dubbo to Sydney or something, for example. Now, that meant that, in theory, if all you did was drive the truck from Dubbo to Sydney, that's fine. But, of course, you've got to load the truck. You've got to unload the truck. You've got to fuel it. You've got to wash it. You've got to do all of those things. You might have had to tarp it back in those days. So put the tarp over it and tie the tarp down. And we never got paid for any of that work. Mm. And now there is the kilometre rate. And we did discuss this last week, whether you should be paid hourly. And then the bosses say, oh, but the driver will deliberately go slow. And then if he goes slow, then he'll get paid more money and it'll cost us more and we can't survive. And then the other argument to that is, well, we'll pay you by the kilometre.
Mm-hmm.
But under the legal award, yes, if you drive from Sydney to Melbourne and that's all you do, you get paid so much per kilometre. But as soon as you drive around in Sydney or Melbourne, you are supposed to be paid hourly for that. And
but these days we have the technology to know if the driver is deliberately going slow.
Well, that's right. They've got the tracking and everything as well. But then we don't always get paid, and not every driver gets paid for the load and unload. And that means you might be putting in 20 hours a week that you're not getting paid for and no one else suffers that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You got to go with the traffic, basically, and if you get stuck in a DC, you're on someone else's time. You're waiting, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not really a truckie's problem, you know, or fault.
Well, Rod, I think you and the Road Freighters Association have been trying to get a better deal for a long time now, haven't you?
Well, not only here, mate. There's a group in America called Parents Against Tired Truckers. PAT. Now, they put in a big campaign probably 4 or 5 years ago to mean that every truck driver in America got paid hourly rate. But even there, the way that the companies work, the bigger the company, of course, the harder it is to get them to change, and they couldn't get it legislated then. And we follow some of the things that they do in the States, but I'm afraid they tried it there and they weren't successful. And we haven't been able to set it up and make sure that everybody's paid properly here yet either.
Yeah. All right.
Well, and the most expensive load, 20 pallets of Bundaberg rum out of Bundy down to Melbourne. That would have been a few bucks.
Yes, yes. And you delivered it all without a broken bottle, didn't you, mate?
Unfortunately, yes.
Good on you, Mikko. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Mike.
See you, mate. Bye-bye. 133-53 is the telephone number. If you've got a question for Rod Hanafy, he's here for a short time this morning. He's the president of the National Road Freighters Association. He's with us every single Tuesday, and today is no exception. We'll play this and we'll come back and talk some more. The Night Shift, Triple M. Hey, Rod, have you got
Luke.
Have you got your Nature B in your pocket? Let me hear it. Shake it for me.
I'd have to dig it out of my bag in the front, mate.
It's in your bag, is it?
Yes.
So, have you been Nature B'd? You don't go anywhere without it, correct?
Correct. Carry it in the truck.
What's it done for you?
Mate, it's obviously when I had the shoulder surgery, it was, I believe it was helpful there because even though I did all the exercises and that sort of stuff, and look, I've never really been a vitamin user. I think that some of that stuff is a bit doubtful and of the value of it. But look, the way you explain it, and with the money back guarantee, I think that it's worthwhile giving it a go.
Money back guarantee. 27 vitamins and aminos, 28 minerals. It all supports energy levels, your immune. Hey, how important, Rod, is it to have your immune system up and running these days, eh?
Certainly at the moment.
Eh? 6 month supply of power pollen, $129.95 plus delivery. And you will get 1 month for free. So 7 Cookie, the boss of Nature Bee in Auckland, he's throwing in an extra month for free. And he's throwing in the two bonus honey pollen soaps. Power Pollen, give it a go. Nature Bee. Powerpollen.com.au. It is unbelievable. Powerpollen.com.au, or just type in Nature Bee. It'll get you there. And I wouldn't recommend it if it didn't work, and I wouldn't recommend it if it didn't come with the money back guarantee. Terry, hello.
How you going?
We're both good. What's your question?
Rod was talking about these expensive loads. Now, I'm a road pilot. I've been for over 43 years now. And over 10 years ago, I done a transformer from Brisbane Wharf out to New Power Station out there at Dalby. Mind you, we had four trucks pulling it, three behind pushing it. And I was curious. I said, just for curiosity, what is this transformer worth? And Blake said, oh, anywhere between $100 million to $300 million. I nearly fell off my perch.
Luke, what he's talking about there is something that weighs, what, would have been 100
700 tonnes.
Oh, okay.
700 tonne it weighed. It was a
that
monster.
That would have been the whole load with the trucks and everything.
Mate, Luke, can you imagine?
Go on, Rod. I'm trying to imagine.
Yep. A trailer that has 12 axles.
Wow.
And on each of those axles, there are 16 tyres.
Wow.
And then you have these big, long beams, and you have another 12 axles. And the transformer is suspended those beams.
Hang on, I want to Google it so I can have a look at it. What do I put in Google?
Well, you could put in transformer, carrying a transformer, or Cometto, C-O-M-E-T-T-O.
C-O.
Is M-E-T-T-O.
Hang on.
Cometto trailers.
Start again. Spell it again.
C-O-M.
C-O-M.
E-T-T-O.
E-T-T-O.
So Cometto heavy haulage trailers.
Okay.
And yes, they are modular. So they come in sort of groups of six.
Look up Rex Andrews too. He's got them on his website.
Who's that?
Rex Andrews.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's a number of companies that have them. Bowers have some. But yes, they're multi-axle platforms. And you can configure them to carry a load. And then you actually have a fellow that stands on the back platform. So you imagine the truck's towing it. Yeah, it steers itself.
Oh,
yeah. So they can steer it around a corner.
Okay, I have found modular systems. Are they self-propelled?
That's the next step up.
Oh, okay, all right.
They're self-propelled, but these are towed by a truck. As he said, there was
four trucks in front, three behind pushing. Jeez. And when we're going up hills, we got two more to look on the front pulling up the hills.
It's
massive. It took us 3 days to do 200 kilometres.
So he's a pilot. He's the bloke that's out the front in the car that's waving the people off the side of the road and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll have to try and find you a decent photo to put up there. I've got one from years ago. But, yes, it's a massive undertaking. And to do those sorts of loads, you don't just ring up and say, oh, I want this move tomorrow. Yeah. Some of those loads take 12 and 18 months to plan.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Really?
Yeah, because you are looking at gross weights, as he said, with the whole truck and the load and everything of 500 and 600 ton running down normal highways. But then you've got to look at bridges, whether the bridges are capable of carrying that load. You've often got to have people running along with you from the electricity people lifting wires up because of the height. You've got to plan for bridges.
And a semi-trail with spare tyres.
Yeah.
I'm looking at one now, and it's carrying a long pipe. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, shit. I touched the screen. It's a touch screen and I've got it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 axles.
Yep.
16
well, that's
axles.
That's just that one. But you imagine if you had two of those trailers that have 12 axles each. That's 24 axles of tyres.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
That is, it can be a nightmare sometimes.
That is unbelievable. Listen, good stuff. Terry, let me send you something. That was a good story. And I've learned something, and I love learning something. What can I send you? You want some Nature Bee?
Yeah, that's that stuff Rod's taken, mate. It's, you know, I'm not getting any younger. Yeah,
the problem with Rod is that he's planting his Nature Bee in the ground and he's drinking Swift Grow. And that's...
Thanks very much for that, Luke.
That's the problem. He needs to he needs to wash his head with Swift Grow.
Make the brains
I'm not even going there.
No, listen, Terry, mate, I'll send you some Nature Bee. And would you like me to send you some... Are you a gardener?
No.
Okay, well, I won't send you any Swift Grow. I'll send you some Nature Bee. Stay there. Jess, can you look after Terry? I'll send you 3 months' supply of Nature Bee from Cookie. Rod, stay there. I've got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to some more, okay?
10-4, good buddy.
10-4, good buddy. 1-333-53 is the telephone number. You've got a question for Rod Hanafy. He can take your call right now. We're going to take a break. Rod Hanafy is with us, president of the National Road Freighters Association. He does it every Tuesday. So these long loads with the 24 axles?
Yes.
They have to be steered from the rear. Is that like those fire engines you see in America where they have someone at the very, very back with steering it?
I suppose that's a simple explanation of it, yes. But if you look at those platforms, and there's a group called Megatrans, and they had a couple of really big Kenworths, and they did some of those jobs. So the truck tows, but you might have two or three trucks at the front, and it pulls the front trailer along, and there is a drawbar on the front that recognises where the truck goes.
Hang on. Just pull up. You got three prime movers at the front.
Yes.
And with three drivers.
Yes.
So you got three prime movers in a row.
Yes, and they're all hooked with a stiff bar.
They're all hooked up together.
But a stiff bar. You're not going to go there?
Naturebee.com.au. But so you've got three prime movers hooked together with a stiff bar, but you need three drivers in each.
A driver in each of those, yes.
And they're sitting there with their foot in the accelerator.
Oh, absolutely, yes. But they also work on the radio together. So you imagine you are pulling something like 300 or 400 ton. You don't just sort of head off down the road and hope for the best. They all talk on the radio and they agree when they're going to shift. Because you've got that much weight, you've got that much strain on that load, you've got to coordinate what you do and where you go. So they're pulling that front set of axles. Then you have those great big beams, your transformer sits in the middle. And then there's a bloke sits on top of the back platform, the back group of 12 axles.
Wow.
And they're all hydraulically steered. Now, they can also lift those platforms up and down.
Jeez.
The suspension raises and lowers to go over certain areas of ground or up over a train line, whatever it might be. And there's a bloke has a little box, sits on the back platform, and he can steer the back platform out around the road, because they're not the sort of thing you just take around a corner.
You wouldn't take it down the Galston Gorge.
No, well, you can't take a B double down there. Blokes have tried.
Imagine taking that.
You
wouldn't take it down the Galston. Now, hang on, the three, I haven't got my head around this. The three prime movers at the front pulling it.
Yes.
With three drivers sitting in the three prime movers.
Yes.
And they're going to change gears all at the same time.
Yes.
What about braking?
Well, the same thing. The bloke at the front, obviously, he's the one that knows where they're going and what they're doing. You've got the pilot out the front that gets all the cars off the road, says, look, we've got a big load coming. We've got to get round this corner or we're going to use the whole road up. The front bloke has to virtually try and aim the load, but something that massive, it's not as simple as, well, we're going to turn right and go around the corner.
Yeah, so do all three prime ministers at the movers at the front, do they steer as well? Or?
Oh, of course they do. They're a normal truck. They drive, but they are all hooked together, and they have a counterweight on the back. So you imagine, Luke, when you put a semi-trailer together, your trailer sits on the back of the truck, and that weight goes onto your drive wheels.
Mm.
So what they have to do, they have very large concrete blocks that sit on the drive, because otherwise you would have no weight on your drive. Your wheels would just spin. and you'd have no control over that load. So they have big counterweights that sit on them to make sure that they have traction.
It's unbelievable. I had no idea.
And as I say, you imagine trying to coordinate that with the power lines and the roads and the drainage.
Bridges.
And some of them take 12 to 18 months to plan such a load as
that. Wow. I've just learned something. Unbelievable. 133353. Aaron's online. Wants to talk to you, Rod Hanafy.
Good morning, Aaron.
Hey, Aaron.
Morning, fellas. How are we going?
Good.
Just a go, mate. Rod, I just wanted to touch on, I don't know if you have heard any rumours or any updates on possibly whether we're going to get digital work diaries or not.
Well, mate, they're available now. You can apply for and have one. You can have an individual one yourself, which you can operate through your phone. That is also a legal device, but it must be an NHBR approved device. And at the moment, they are optional. But the way things are going, there is no doubt that there are those people who think that they can solve all of our industry's problems by making it mandatory. Now, I don't agree with that. I say that realistically, we need rules that give us flexibility now before you go to an electronic work diary, which is black and white. And it's like, yes, the logbook is a little bit flexible. You can move a minute here and a minute there and no one's going to know. But an EWD, you go 1 second over, technically that's a breach and you could get a fine for it.
That was going to be my next question, whether it would go to minute to minute, yeah.
Well, at the moment, the law is that there is meant to be an 8-minute tolerance, but that's 8 minutes in a day, in a 24-hour period, not 8 minutes each time you get in the truck. And we know there's not enough rest areas. We know that there are all of these things over which we have absolutely no control. So what happens if you're driving down the road and you're coming up to your 5 hours and your electronic work diary says, right, you must stop now. So what do? Stop right in the middle of the highway.
No,
that's not going to work. But if you continue on and the next time you get pulled up by an enforcement officer and he can log into that because that's how he's going to monitor what you've done, and it says, you drove for 5 hours, 8 minutes and 7 seconds. Well, here's a fine for that. And those
well,
are the
you'll probably get another fine for going through those point-to-point cameras too.
Well, look, again, they're a little bit different because, yes, that you can argue whether they're accurate. They have to be tested and calibrated. But at the moment, yes, you can have an EWD. It's not mandatory. It's optional, but it must be an approved device. There are certain requirements. You can't just change from a logbook today to a an EWD tomorrow because the EWD must hold at least 28 days history to prove you're complying with all your breaks. But they are available, and some blokes, depending on the run you're on, say that they're really helpful.
No, I use the Logbook Checker app, which is absolutely brilliant to help you with calculating your hours and your long hours and night hours and all that. And that's brilliant. The bloke whoever invented that, he is on the ball.
All right.
Ivan. He's a top bloke, and he did a really good job, and that certainly helped a lot of drivers because trying to keep it all in your head, Luke, that's the problem. You've got to remember when you started yesterday, when you started last week, for all of these rules that we live under, and there's an app called Logbook Checker. I think it's only about $30 or something, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, about that for a year's subscription,
like
which is,
And you sort of fill that in first, and it tells you whether you can drive off down the road legally.
Yeah. It's a lot to think about. The pros and cons, I would have thought, until you were talking tonight, right, I would have thought that the electronic logbook just would have made sense. It would have been easier. But the pros and the cons are still there, and you've just given me some cons I hadn't thought of. They will be accurate to the second, and they might give you 8 minutes leeway, but that's 8 minutes leeway in a whole day.
Yes.
Yeah. Good on you, Aaron.
Thanks, man.
Thank you for your call. 133353 is the telephone number. The Night Shift, Triple M, back in a sec. Rod Hanafy is with us, the president of the National Road Freighters Association. He's with us every Tuesday. We're running out of time. How much sleep time have you got before you got to start, Rob? What's the story? You're at Mungandai. Tell us about Mungandai.
Oh, Mungandai is a little village right on the river and on the border. I've actually delivered a load of chemical out here previously.
There's lots of rivers and there's lots of borders, Rod. So some of your best work.
Queensland, thank New you. South Wales, yeah, the good, border.
Well done.
There you go. There is a large cotton gin here, which I'm going to visit in the morning. And I've got to say, mate, I left St. George. It's about 110 kilometres, I think, from St. George to Mungandai, coming down from Dalby, and I only saw one vehicle in that whole time.
You serious?
So I am. I'm dead serious, yes.
Have you struck any floodwaters?
Yes, into Dalby this morning. I think there was water across the road in about 10 places, and then I come back out of Dalby this afternoon, and it was same again, about 10 places between Dalby and the Tara turnoff. But blokes were coming out this way. There was one bloke in front of me. I said, how long since you've been out this way? And he said, oh, not for years. He said, come out this way to avoid the floods down the Newell. When I came out, the Toowoomba Road was closed, and I was heading out of Gundawindi towards Toowoomba, and all these trucks were calling me up saying, the road's closed, the road's closed. And I said, yep, that's fine, but I was going out via Moonee, out the Leichhardt Highway, which veers off. And again, going out there, mate, I think I saw one truck in about an hour and a half heading out that way. So,
wow.
And when
And when you say people are calling you up, what, on the radio?
Yes, on the UHF.
On Channel 40?
Yes.
So you just keep Channel 40 on?
All the time, yes. I've got two UHF radios. One sits on 18 to talk to the caravanners and one on 40 to the truckies. And then they're now 80 channel sets on each of those. So you can go off and talk on another channel. Can I ask you a music question, Luke?
Yeah, go on.
You played that song, The Verve. So have you ever seen those videos of the 1,000 musicians?
All playing the same instrument?
No. All playing the same song.
All playing the same song. Yeah. Playing The Verve?
Well, yeah, that's one. They play Highway to Hell by AC/DC.
Yeah, I've seen the Highway to Hell one, yes.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it?
It is, Ron.
Yes, it is very moving.
It's up there with the 24 axles, isn't it, really? Hey?
At least, yeah.
It is. It is. So you keep one radio on 40, one on 18, so that the caravanners don't touch 40.
Look, some of them do. Some of them travel on 40. But the problem is, of course, as we've discussed in the past, blokes will either abuse them or they will be talking about things that the caravaner with his wife and perhaps his kids in the car doesn't want to hear, so they turn them down or off. And then, of course, you get caravaners together travelling along on 40 and they're talking about how nice this is and how good the pickies were and we're trying to tell them the road's closed or there's an accident ahead. So that's where Channel 18 came from. I started it in 1999.
You started it?
I did.
You started radio segregation. You are a trendsetter and a star, Rod Hanover. You set about by delivering a campaign to encourage caravanners to get off 40 and get onto 18.
Not necessarily off 40. And look, there are a lot of caravan clubs that will get out and travel together. So you'll be four or five of the caravans, and a lot of the time they'll travel along nose to tail, and then, of course, you're in a loaded BW. You can't just zip round six of them.
No.
So we wanted to be able to talk to them. And unless you knew what channel they were on, they could be on any one of those. Well, in those days, we had 40 channel sets. Now we have 80 channel sets. They could have been anywhere. And the problem was then, if you wanted to call them up and say, mate, coming up behind you, you didn't know where they were. So I started the idea of Channel 18 as the caravaners channel. It's now become sort of the RVers channel, because in those days, the motorhomers, they had their own channel. They've now come over to Channel 18 as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's recognised by the Australian Communications Authority, much like Channel 40 is, as the truckies or the road channel. And many of the caravan clubs have adopted it.
There you go. See, I've learned a lot tonight. It's been great.
Good to see.
Okay, look, you've got a few people that want to talk to you. How much longer have you got before you've got to sleep? Tell me.
Well, mate, we can do two or three.
Okay, two or three. We'll do three. Okay. Tech is online. That's what he's calling himself. Tech. Is it really Tech?
Yes, it's Tech.
Okay, Tech, talk to Rod.
G'day, Rod. Hey, just on the topic of most expensive load you ever carried. So yep. I was an ex-Defence Force member in a transport unit, and we used to cart Abrams tanks, M1 Abrams tanks, from Darwin to Rockhampton or to South Australia in Kautana training area. Yep. And the tank would weigh around 60 ton and 3.7 width. And my guess, the cost of the unit would be around $10 million.
Yep.
That's an estimate, so yeah. And and some states would require two pilots and police escort, so like South Australia and Queensland.
Yes, the army have a whole fleet of their own trucks, Luke, do some of it, and then they cart their machines around for when they do war games and those sorts of things as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Good on you, Tech. Yep. Thank you for that.
Thanks, mate.
We'll keep moving. Peter, hello.
Hello?
Yes, Peter, you're on. Talk to Rod.
How you going, Rod?
Yeah, everybody out there, and those people on hold, and those people about to ring, Rod and I are well. We are fine. No need to ask. Go ahead, Pete.
I'm glad to hear that, Luke. Most expensive load. I used to cart cigarettes, 48 pallets in a container. We weren't allowed to stop. We used to get followed by federal police. If the police actually tried to pull us up, we had to hold a sign up to the window saying, follow me to my destination.
Is that true?
Yes.
What, we weren't allowed is that in case you were being hijacked?
Yes.
Seriously?
Yes.
Even if it was a police car?
Yeah, even if it was a police car, we'd have a sign. We used to put it up to the window and say, follow us to my destination. I'm not allowed to stop.
Because you were carting cigarettes?
Cigarettes, yes.
Did you know this, Rod?
I'm aware of that, mate. Yeah, there are certain cargoes, like under bond cargoes.
What's that?
Well, cigarettes and alcohol.
Right.
Those sorts of things.
They're not allowed to stop.
That. Yeah. Look, in the States, there is a big problem with trucks being hijacked. We don't have it so much in Australia. There's occasional one that's stolen. But in America, there is a problem with trucks being hijacked. Of course, we've all seen the movies, you know, the Fast and Furious and all those sorts of things where they break into the back and steal stuff out of it. But, yeah, it is an issue. If you imagine that a load of cigarettes is worth an absolute mozza, and if you could steal it or hijack it, we don't want people to do that here, of course. But, yes, for those people in that way inclined, in the criminal sector of our community, it's an easy target.
There you go.
And also, my father was a heavy haulage driver. Actually, the couple of the Kenworths my father used to drive, Megalith own now. You can actually see some of the photos, if you want, Luke, on my Facebook page, of a rear steering.
Okay. What's your Facebook page?
Peter. Shall I give out my surname here, or?
Well, if you're inviting everybody to look at your Facebook page, it's up to you. If you want people to look at your Facebook page, yes, give us your last name. If you don't, it's up to you.
Peter Abella, A-B-E-L-O.
Okay, I'll have a look.
And I also have three holders, Luke, one SLR and two VLs.
Did you hear that, Rod?
Yes. Now, those trucks that Megatrans have, those Kenworths, were from Groote Eylandt, and Louis Julius actually had three of them at one stage as well. They've got V12 Detroits in them, Luke.
V12. How many horsepower?
I think they were only 500, but they had Allison automatic gearboxes in them. So they were 12-speed automatics with V12 Detroits. And the wheels on them were, I think, nearly 5 feet tall, Luke.
Holy moly, Jesus. Good on you, Peter. Thanks for your call. And I tell you what, we'll say hello to Greg and I'll let you get some sleep. Greg, where are you?
Yeah, g'day, mate. I'm in Adelaide.
He's in Adelaide. All right, Greg, talk to Rod.
Yeah, straight off the bat, the most expensive I hauled was $4 million from Sydney to the Moomba gas and oil fields in the Simpson Desert for diamond drill bits.
Ah, very good.
And
we cut everything to everyone.
Pardon?
We cut everything to everyone.
Absolutely. Out in the desert, it wasn't bad. I worked there myself for 12 months.
Yep.
And early on, potholes.
Yes.
I had a couple of mates on Harley Davidson's, about 28K out of Horsham, hit a pothole. One ended up with a broken leg. Other one went over the top of him. Both bikes written off, and they were replaced.
Yeah.
With all hospital bills paid as well.
It's a pothole, that one.
It is. If you go over a pothole that hasn't been fixed, and like with all this rain, Rod Hanafy, there are potholes everywhere, and they easily become bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, you start with a small hole, the rain, a car, a truck goes over it, bang, 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 it soon becomes a big pothole. If we go around suing local councils that don't have the coffers, I mean, I don't know what their insurance policies are, but are we likely to see then local councils putting up ratepayers' rates to cover this sort of stuff?
Look, it's like you said before, it's the chicken and the egg thing, but we have to report them. Now, not everybody is going to sue. You know, some people are going to hit the pothole, the tyre is going to absorb the damage, there's going to be no harm. But if it's done damage to your vehicle because the road's not suitable, then it's like anything. You have the capacity to seek redress. But the most important thing is notifying them of the pothole and hopefully you prevent someone being damaged or prevent an accident. And that's where we've said before, you'll see the numbers up on the billboards. So in New South Wales, 13 17 00, it says report traffic incidents. But you can also use those numbers, there's a different one in each state, to report a pothole. And if you report it when it's small, Luke, as you said, and you've just seen it, it's developing, you ring the road authority, so I've seen this pothole, I think it's dangerous, I'd like you to get the road crew out, and they might not necessarily be there tomorrow, but they might be out there 2 or 3 days later. And if you get that one pothole or that one bump or dip fixed, you may save somebody's life.
You might. Yeah, very good point. Hey, Greg in Adelaide, thanks for your call.
No worries, mate. Have a good night.
Thank you, mate. Well, we went all over Australia tonight. I've got to let you get to sleep. What's your logbook? When have you got to sleep? When have you got to go down and wake up?
Oh, well, I'm going to bed now. I'm in bed ready to go to sleep. And I'll be getting up in the morning and having a lovely breakfast of a coconut and a muesli cookie that my daughter made for me on the weekend.
And two what?
And two what?
Nature bees.
Then I'll get loaded.
Two nature bees.
Oh, of course. Yes, of course.
Jesus, thanks. Two nature bees, powerpollen.com.au. Rod Hanafy, great to talk to you again, mate. You drive carefully. Have a good week. We'll see you next. See you next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday morning. Safe travelling to all.
In the meantime, those of you who want to talk about everything else, happy to keep talking about trucking issues and potholes. Should we be suing governments, whether they be state, federal or local, for potholes? Where does it all end? But we've got lots of conversation on the table. If you want to join the program and join the conversation, now is the time to ring in and let's reignite the program. This is The Night Shift on Triple M.